opinions are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
This is the best of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. This is Dr. Patty, and we're going to be talking about a very sensitive subject on my radio show here called Therapy in a Nutshell. So the topic for today is what I call ultrasensitivity. I've been in private practice for over 34 years, and over many, many years, I have often seen people who are extremely sensitive and at times overly sensitive, and they don't know how to deal with it. And so when I hear people talking about how they are touched so deeply about things and they feel like they can't get away from certain feelings and they can't differentiate between what they should be feeling and what they are feeling, my radar starts going up for maybe they're an ultra-sensitive person. And let me give you a couple examples. And one reason this subject is near and dear to my heart, I will share this with you, is all my life I have been an ultra-sensitive. And myself, like many people, when you are growing up as an ultra-sensitive, you're the one who gets teased a lot. You get teased because people say, well, partly because you're easy to tease. People can get a rise out of you and a reaction. You're the one that cries easily at things that happens. You take things to heart and you just feel like you're wounded very easily, which if you don't know how to handle that, you can look like a good victim and a good target. Ultrasensitives are often bullied, misunderstood, targeted. And, you know, for example, your siblings will tease you and then they'll say, well, can't you take a joke? I was just teasing, and you're sitting there crying. So being an ultrasensitive growing up, I was always told I was too sensitive and couldn't take a joke. But many people are, too. So that evolves from being a kid who's an ultrasensitive into an adult who's trying to manage some extreme sensitivity. And I have always thought of my own ultrasensitivity or those of the people that I help in therapy as ultrasensitivity is a blessing and a burden. And I often say it's a blessing and a curse, but it's really just a blessing and a burden. It has its wonderful attributes, and we're going to explore those today, and it has its difficult things to manage. And we're going to define those, and I'm actually going to give you some really cool coping skills to embrace your ultrasensitivity as well as understand it, and then how to manage it in a way that brings out more of the blessings than the burdens. So let's go over exactly what I see as ultrasensitives. And you see if you resonate with this, if it fits for your kind of personality. And look at it this way, too. I see ultrasensitivity as a personality kind of trait. Is it genetic? Yeah, there's some geneticism in there. Almost everyone that's an ultrasensitive can say, I'm just like my fill-in-the-blank, like my mom, like my dad, sister, like my aunt. They will say they almost always have a family member that's very similar to them. Is it also environmental? Sure. Kids that live in difficult environments or if there's abuse or things like that, they can become ultrasensitive just for their own safety and defense. So why you're an ultrasensitive is less important than are you an ultrasensitive, and how do you understand it, and what do you deal with it? How do you deal with it? Okay, so ultrasensitives are often extremely creative. They sometimes even see things differently than the average bear. They might see more intense color or a more intense pattern, and their sensitivity helps them to feel the emotion of things that somebody who's not as sensitive might not feel. For example, an ultrasensitive who's a painter might almost feel the emotion in a beautiful sunset that they're painting. So that ultrasensitivity can really help with creativity and with talented kind of expression. Ultrasensitives are often very intuitive. Now let's take intuitive on a spectrum. Intuitive just in a way of they're kind of, they understand people, they see the nuance of things, they can kind of read people well. And step that up to they can almost feel the energy in a room. Somebody walks in and they're depressed or they're upset and they haven't said a word, they haven't done anything behaviorally that the average bear in the room would say, what's wrong? But the ultra-sensitive will say, something's wrong with that person. Sometimes they know the people, which can make them more highly intuitive to what's going on, or they don't know them, and they can still really intuit the emotion that's coming from that person. Now, go down that spectrum and take the ultra-sensitive person who is extremely psychic or has very... the joke we always say is the woo-woo powers. They have a lot of woo-woo. A friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, calls it the force. They have the force. They can really read things. So that's all part of that ultra-sensitivity. Ultra-sensitives are often very sympathetic and very empathetic. It's important to understand the difference. Sympathy is where you get it what somebody's saying and you can kind of intuit how that would be. And you're very sensitive to what's going on. For example, a friend comes up to you and says, I've been diagnosed with cancer. You've never had cancer, but you can kind of sympathize and say, wow, you know, I can understand how that could be difficult. Empathy is where you understand from a personal knowing. So the friend comes up and says they have cancer, and you have recovered from cancer. And you come from a very deep place of empathy because you deeply understand what they're going through. So ultra-sensitives are often highly sympathetic and highly empathetic. They also feel the pain of others very deeply. And this can be part of the burden of what happens. They see somebody really hurting and it can affect them deeply. And we're going to go more into that as the show goes on because I want to teach you how to recognize that and how to deal with it. They also can cry very easily. It's so funny that when the AT&T commercial comes on or whatever that, you know, is all sappy and makes you cry, everybody in the room will look over and lean over to the ultra-sensitive and they'll go, oh, Patty's crying again, or something like that, because they expect the ultra-sensitive to feel what they are seeing as like, oh, this is an emotional commercial, but she's crying. And it isn't always a she. You need to know that. I see as many male ultra-sensitive as I do female. It is a personality characteristic far more than is anything having to do with gender. Okay, so another thing that ultra-sensitives tend to be is sometimes avoidant. Sometimes it's a smart thing to be avoidant because they're avoiding the things that really upset them. For example, I do not watch horror films. I don't watch that kind of stuff because I avoid it. Because it really upsets me and it'll give me nightmares. Because I just kind of feel like I suck it in and then it's hanging there on my consciousness. I also don't watch shows that have a lot of torture in them. I thought Game of Thrones was absolutely incredible in terms of its acting and storyline, but I simply could not watch it because the degree of violence and the degree of torture in that show tortured me. So I avoided it. In fact, I had to stop watching it. So avoidance can be because it's important that you understand what you're avoiding, and it can also be just kind of instinctual that you don't want to feel that. Ultra-sensitives can also isolate themselves. They sometimes can't handle difficult situations such as funerals or large gatherings of people or emotional situations, so they'll isolate themselves and avoid all at the same time. So the list can go on and on about what ultra-sensitives do. So if you are starting to resonate with this show and saying, oh my gosh, I think I'm an ultra-sensitive, stop and say, what are the ways that you're ultra-sensitive? How does that work? And remember that we're differentiating the ultra-sensitivity of emotions from the sensory processing kind of oversensitivity. That's a whole different show. But ultra-sensitive can also have sensory processing issues that make them even more vulnerable to oversensations. Okay, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, I want to teach you how to figure out where you end and someone else begins.
We're going to get into the structure of a hero's journey using a three-act structure. But first, I want to hit again on the I don't want to be cliché. There's a reason why the hero's journey pops up in a lot of popular fiction. It works. People like a hero's journey.
And you can still be unique, but use this tool in your toolbox. I don't think anybody said to George Lucas after A New Hope came out, well, yeah, that story's been told before.
I mean, we joke around, I see memes all the time comparing Star Wars and Harry Potter and how it's basically the same story. But both still have a very, very large fan base. People love Star Wars and people love Harry Potter, despite it having the same basic structure.
I'm going to correct you there. It's not despite, it's because. These stories ring true because they're communicated in this hero's journey style.
So let's get into it. Starting with Act 1, the introduction, we're going to split things between internal and external. It starts with the hero is introduced. They show them in their everyday lives, how they feel about their everyday lives combined with what it is and how it exists.
As audience members, we know something is wrong about everyday life. Sometimes, in the case of Lord of the Rings, it's that this villain was never conquered. He just went quiet. Harry Potter, kind of the same way. In Star Wars, it's a lot more obvious because the Empire rules all, and that's just how life is.
The internal part of this is that every day is the same for the hero. Every day, Luke gets up, helps his uncle at the farm to harvest moisture. And he wants something different, but he doesn't have the resources to do it.
He's just looking at the double sunset. And a lot of your characters are going to be dreaming of a bigger life. You've got Belle in Beauty and the Beast. Is this it? Is this all life is about? I want adventure in the Great White somewhere.
Until one day. So everything is the same until blank.
This sometimes is your inciting action. More often than not, it's a preface to your inciting action. It's the stranger has come to town, and the bad guy's army is following him, but the droids come in Star Wars. And that's a preface to the Empire who is chasing them down.
Letters start arriving at Harry Potter's house.
Then something happens where the world's problems become extra personal to your hero.
Harry Potter discovers that the reason he lives with his aunt and uncle is not because his parents died in a car crash, but because they were killed by this evil villain in the wizarding world that he's suddenly part of.
Luke's aunt and uncle die. When that happens, that spurs him forward into this journey. This gives him a personal motivation. And remember, your hero is still believing a lie about themselves during this time period. You should have introduced this lie by this point, and maybe your readers recognize it as a lie, maybe they don't. That's okay. Either way, cool. Just so long as it's introduced.
A lot of the time when the world problems... We're going to get into the structure of a hero's journey using a three-act structure. But first, I want to hit again.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
HJ, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
This is the best of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and you are listening to the beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis, Native American Flutist of the Year for the Native American Music Awards in 2017. He's won numerous awards, played all over the world. He has 6 CDs, and if you're interested in his music, you can go to Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby. You can go to YouTube. You can go to his website, randymcginnis.com. Check out his music, and we appreciate him letting us use it on my show. It's beautiful. Okay, we are talking about ultrasensitivity. We're also live on the air today, so if you have a comment or a question, feel free to call in. Area code 530-605-4567. Real easy to remember those last four numbers, 4567. Call in, make a comment. You don't have to say who you are. You can do it anonymously. And I promise if I recognize your voice, I will not say so. Okay. So we're talking about ultrasensitivity and how it is a blessing and a burden for many people. So my job today is to help you understand it and help you manage it so that you get more of the blessings and less of the burdens. Right now I want to talk to you about one of the factors in ultrasensitivity is that ultrasensitives don't always know where they end and someone else begins. So what happens is when somebody starts to tell you how they feel, or you're noticing that somebody is depressed, your heart goes out to them. And I want you to picture almost physically, like your heart goes out to them and it almost wraps around them and pulls them into you. So their emotions in that moment feel like they become your emotions. And all of a sudden you're feeling down or depressed or angry or upset or worried. And you start to feel yourself cascading downward and go, I just feel so horrible for you. That is an interesting phenomenon because when you can kind of feel what someone's feeling, it gives you a very deep understanding of what they're going through, which is beautiful. But if you get lost in their emotion, in their issue, their problem, their sense of being, then it's very difficult for you to be of help to them or of help to yourself. Let me give you a whole different example here. In my private practice, I can often feel the energy of somebody walking into the room. And even though they're not saying so, I might feel like there's some kind of depression or there's something going on because I'm just really reading them. I'm reading their body language, the emotion on their face, the color of their words as they're speaking. And there's even a physical sensation that I get. I'll be sitting there talking with someone, and I almost feel like they become a black vortex, like a hole that is sinking. And I feel like I'm getting pulled into that eddy, that hole. And when I kind of get it, it is kind of a God message. It's somebody saying, hey, you need to know this person's super depressed, even though they don't sound like it. I acknowledge that I'm getting the message, and I immediately pull back from that. And I don't have to change anything. I just acknowledge I'm getting it. I'm getting that deepening sensation. I'm getting the message that they might be depressed. I pull back and recenter myself into my own space. And then I will, as appropriate, turn the subject toward, hey, are you really feeling depressed? Let's talk about this. And do that in an appropriate therapeutic manner. But the cue I'm getting is from my ultrasensitivity. And so it's important that I know where they end and I begin. As I pull back and recenter, I'm recognizing this is not my emotion. I am simply tapping into what they are feeling. I can still be caring and kind. I can still be empathetic or sympathetic. And I can also keep my therapeutic distance. And that therapeutic distance does not need to be cold. And it does not need to be just that of a psychologist and a client. It can be what you keep. When you tap into a friend's pain, let's say a friend comes up and says, I just found out my child is very ill. And you're an ultrasensitive who highly resonates with children's issues and children hurting and children ill or people losing their children. And you immediately feel their pain and you tear up and you feel really upset and sad for them. That is a super awareness. You acknowledge that you're feeling that way and you get it. But you also acknowledge that what you're picking up on some is what they're going through. So knowing where you end and your friend begins is huge. It makes you as an ultrasensitive the blessing that they're in front of them. Now, if you start drowning in their emotion and they start having to take care of you, you haven't helped them. You've become more of an emotional burden to them in that moment. So this is one of the reasons it's really important that ultrasensitives know where they end and someone else begins. Because almost every ultrasensitive I've known wants to be of help to people. They make very good therapists. They're often in the helping professions like doctors and nurses and things like that because they want to heal. They want to help people. So when you stop and say, what part of this is my emotion and what part of this is possibly my friend's emotion, then you're starting to have that boundary between who you are and who they are. And then you are at a better place to be able to be sensitive and helpful at the same time. Let me talk to you a little bit about what happens when you can't differentiate between where you end and someone else begins. This is often what happens between parents and children. Let's take the example of your child, whatever age, your child might be young, your child might be an adult, your child comes up to you and says, I want to talk to you, and is going to tell you that they feel that they're gay or that they have some other sexuality issue that is not what you thought it was. So when a parent can differentiate between who they are and who their child is, there's a better chance that the parent is going to truly listen to that person and really hear what they're saying. If they are ultrasensitive, it's possible for them to get lost in what they feel and what the person sharing the information is feeling and get muddied up in that. So in a perfect world, your child comes up to tell you something that could be difficult for you to hear, and you listen intently, and you seek to understand before you seek to be understood. Remember, you've heard me say that lots of times. So you are seeking to understand exactly what this person you love is telling you and sharing with you. And you are not coloring it with your sensitive crayons. You are really trying to understand. Now, at some point in the conversation, especially if you're the person sharing the difficult news with you is a sensitive person, they will allow you to have the room for what you feel. They'll allow you to have the room for the things you worry about for them. But if it's a very open discussion where everybody knows where they end and someone else begins, it should not be a very detrimental discussion where you're being judged and told what to do and put down, and the parent listening is basically saying, you are an extension of me, and who you are defines who I am. And that's the point I was getting to. When we don't know where we end and someone else begins, then we tend to color them with our crayons, and they become an extension of us. If I can fix you, then I don't have to feel bad. So let's back that off. That's a pretty hot situation sometimes when there's difficult information to be shared. So when that happens, that's a challenge for even the ultra-sensitive or the non-ultra-sensitive. But let's take something a little more benign. You're watching a movie that is extremely emotional, and it's meant to touch your feelings, and it's meant to make you feel cry and feel happy and feel sad and really relate with the actors. Someone who's an ultra-sensitive might go home and be very depressed and have a very hard time and can't separate themselves from where the movie ended and all the feelings and where their feelings began. So it's kind of a mushy boundary issue that you will immerse yourself in whatever emotions are happening in the room or on the screen or in front of you. So the ultrasensitive also becomes extremely sensitive to things like criticism or feedback or suggestions, even mild suggestions for change. The ultrasensitive will tend to read into a situation to protect themselves from an onslaught of difficult emotions. And in doing that, they often lose where they end and someone else begins. So this is the first step in really beginning to regulate your ultrasensitivity. And I'll tell you, if I could snap my fingers and make someone not an ultrasensitive, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't give up my ultrasensitivity because I think it makes me a really good therapist. I think it helps me help people. People feel loved by me very often, and I like that. I think part of that is because I'm an ultrasensitive, and I wouldn't give it up. But I really like it that over the years of my life, I learned how to differentiate between what was mine and what was someone else's. Because when it is your emotion, I can be empathetic, I can be sympathetic, I can be helpful, but I don't begin to drown in what you're feeling. And it's just super important that you begin to recognize that. So before we go to break, I want you to stop and think, where do I lose my boundary? Is it with my spouse that I start to feel like whatever I'm feeling, he's feeling, or whatever my spouse is feeling, we're both feeling the same thing? That's a projection onto a person close to you of what you're feeling. Is it your children? Because we often mesh ourselves up emotionally with our children and define ourselves by whether they're smart or good-looking or athletic or whether they fit societal norms. Is it a best friend that you feel certain your best friend will never have a different opinion, and then you find out they're different politically and you're totally shocked? Oh, my gosh. It's so funny in this political arena today. People, if they like you, they automatically assume you're of the same political persuasion. And it's so interesting to me to watch that happen in people in groups. And if they don't like you, they kind of assume you're of the opposite political persuasion as they are, especially if they're very passionate about their politics. So it's just a funny thing to watch. All right, so I want you to stop and look. Where are you tending to mesh yourself in with someone else's emotions? What people in your life? What situations? Is it your workplace? Is it your home? Is it your friends? And just kind of take a look at that. And when we come back, I'm going to give you some skills to begin to manage your sensitivity. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
This is the best of therapy in a nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, Dr. Patty, and we are talking about ultrasensitivity. And are you an ultrasensitive? And how being an ultrasensitive is a blessing and a burden all at once. And my goal here today is to help you understand it and step more into the blessings and less of the burdens. So in this section of the show, I want to talk to you about how to manage your sensitivity. And the first step for that is what we talked about in the last section. You need to know where you end and someone else begins. And the reason you need to do that is so that you can keep your feet on the ground and not go swirling down into whatever they're experiencing, but also because you need to know what are your things to deal with and what are not your things to deal with. When is it appropriate just to seek to understand, but not have to fix, not have to do something, not have to rescue? And that's really important for the ultrasensitive, because many ultrasensitives are the ones that will jump in to their own detriment to try to fix somebody or help them out. They'll give them the last money out of their wallet when they really needed to go buy groceries. They'll project their own feelings of loss and emptiness onto somebody and step in to try and fix it for them when it wasn't even called for or asked for. So if you mesh yourself up with somebody else in terms of getting all tangled up with their emotions, you may lose your objectivity of how much you should help and how much you shouldn't. Now, my definition of codependency is when you are helping somebody else to the detriment of you, when you're involved in their issues and their problems and it's harmful to you. That can be codependent. And some ultrasensitives, not all, of course, but some ultrasensitives tend to be codependent. They want to help everybody, fix everybody, make it so no one in the world is ever suffering. And I understand that, but we also have to recognize what is ours to deal with and what is theirs to deal with. And the phrase that helps me a lot is I say, that's not your monkey. And so I will say to myself, Patty, it's not your monkey. Don't go there. Just listen. Just seek to understand. Don't go there. And the vision I have for not your monkey is there's a little herd of monkeys on everybody's back. And you are responsible for feeding and watering your own monkeys. You are not supposed to be feeding and watering everybody else's monkeys. So when you're an ultrasensitive and somebody is telling you how they're hurting or they're sad or they're broke or they're something, the ultrasensitive in you wants to step in and fix it for them. And part of the reason you want to do that is because you want them to feel better so that you will feel better. And I don't mean to make that sound selfish. It's a very altruistic kind of emotion. I really want to help you. I hate seeing you in pain. I'd like to help you get out of pain. So I know you're happy, and then I'll feel better. So just know that that's the boundary thing. And when you give yourself permission to know what is theirs and what is yours to feel and to fix, you will stand stronger as somebody who probably can help. And in many, many situations, just listening, seeking to understand what they're saying without fixing, is a huge gift to people, and they often don't get that. When you become that person, friends will actually say to you, I know I can talk to you because you really just listen and you don't tell me what to do and you don't judge me and you don't step in and start running all over the place trying to fix things. They will actually appreciate that. So that's the first step. Know where you end and someone else begins. And then the second step is to recognize what is your monkey to feed and water and what is their monkey to feed and water. And I'd like to say we all have one monkey, but most of us have a lot of monkeys. That's just how it goes. And in therapy, you try to understand your monkeys and get rid of some of them and or relegate them to be quiet. All right, so after you've figured that part out, then what I like ultrasensitives to do is to embrace their ultrasensitivity. To say, you know, I feel things deeply and I feel others' pain very readily. And so you give yourself permission to feel. The ultrasensitive whose eyes tear up and they feel compassion and they feel, you know, heartfelt feelings for the person in front of them, it's okay to give yourself permission to do that. a very dear friend of mine who's an incredible doctor, is a very sensitive man. And when he hears his patients really hurting, it's not unusual for his eyes to tear up, for him to give them a hug, for him to say, I get it that you're in pain, and you're here for us to see what we can do to work on this. And as a doctor, he's got a lot of tools in his tool bag, so he can pull them out and start helping them. And you have to remember, they're there asking for help, and they are sharing their sensitivity because they want his help. But he also gives himself permission to feel and permission to let the person in front of him see that he's very sensitive. And he does that without any shame. And that's kind of what I'm asking ultrasensitives out there to do. Embrace your emotions. Know that you cry easily. So when you're that person that they lean over and say, oh, Patty's crying at the commercial, you go, yep, because I feel everything. You just embrace that ultrasensitivity and you step into it and you don't apologize for it. You say that's who you are. Okay, so let's go over those again. You're going to know where you stop and someone else begins. You're going to know what is yours to feel and what is theirs. So you're going to feed and water your own monkeys, not theirs. You're going to give yourself permission to feel your emotions without shame. And another friend of mine, I love what he says. He was crying, a big, big burly guy, and he was crying one day. And he said, I handed him a Kleenex. And he said, hey, I'm not wiping these tears away. I've earned them. And I just thought that was so cool because he was embracing his sensitive nature, and it was beautiful. So then the next thing you're going to do is you're going to learn how to hold your emotions. Now, there's a visual I have for this. I'm really visual, so sometimes a visual component helps me help people hold on to stuff. The visual component I have of hold your emotions is you're going to hold the dog poop. And I always say I don't always call it poop, but my producer, Jared, would give me the beep if I said the other word, so I can't. But you're going to hold the dog poop. And what that is you recognize that some emotions have been dumped into your hands, and you are sitting there holding this stinky stuff. And my goal for you as an ultrasensitive, or as someone who's not ultrasensitive, by the way, is to sit there and hold it. You don't fling it around the room. You don't stuff it in your heart. You don't analyze the heck out of it. You sit there and you hold it. And when you figure out what it is and how you got it and how you feel about it and you've really experienced the emotions of it, then you can wash your hands and put it away. The importance of this is that you recognize I am feeling something about something. And instead of just running around the room like a chicken with your head cut off or flinging emotions around or projecting your own emotions onto everybody else, you are sitting quietly and holding what you're feeling. So now let's put this into practical sense. Friend comes over and is talking to you about something difficult. Maybe they're coming out to you about their sexuality. Maybe they are explaining to you that they're depressed. Maybe they're sharing with you that they've got some problems with their child. Whatever, they're telling you something difficult. First thing you're going to do is stop and say, this is their issues, these are their issues, not mine. So I'm going to seek to understand. I'm not going to fix. I'm not going to offer judgment or criticizing. I'm not going to interrupt them with my own story. I'm going to just listen and let them proceed. Then you're going to give yourself permission to feel. You're a sensitive person, and you're picking up on their pain or their angst or their sadness, and you feel it as well. Acknowledge that you are feeling that. And, you know, maybe say to them, wow, I can feel your pain. I can feel how heavy your heart is. Cry with them. It's okay. That doesn't mean you have to fix them or you have to change their emotions or you have to run away from your own emotions. You know, everybody thinks if they start crying, they're like the little kid with the finger in the dike. If you pull your finger out, the water's going to flood through the levee and drown you. No, you're going to just feel it. So then when you have a little bit of space, what you're going to do is hold the stuff in your hands. And you're going to say, what am I feeling? How did I feel about what this person shared with me? What was I doing as an ultrasensitive? Did I keep my boundary? And you're just going to really experience it. And this is also where you give yourself permission to cry or to overreact in that moment away from your person that you're trying to listen to or help. Because you are really differentiating between your emotions as an ultrasensitive and their sharing with you and coming to you because you are a caring, sensitive person who really listens. So those are some of the steps in managing this sensitivity. And a lot of it has to do with you embracing the fact that you're an ultrasensitive. You're not ashamed of it. You're not apologizing for it. But you're also not using your ultrasensitivity in such a way that it makes someone else's difficulties harder, or it puts extra burdens on you that you really don't need. So rather than be avoidant and isolative to what's happening, really notice and listen and feel it, and even say, this is what I'm feeling. I'll give you a quick example before we go to break. I have a tendency when I'm really angry to cry. And it used to really tick me off because I thought, ah, darn it, Patty, stop it. Because I'd be embarrassed that I was crying when I wasn't sad. So what I started to do, I don't know, probably 20 years ago, I started to say, I'm not crying because I'm sad. I'm crying because I'm really angry. And I just defined it for myself, and I defined it for the person listening. And the people would look at me and like go, oh, I don't think they knew what to say to that. But it was mostly for me because I didn't like going away later saying, oh, I just gave the total wrong impression of what I was feeling, and I don't like that. I'm a person who really likes to stand in her truth. And my truth at that moment wasn't, I'm sad, it's I'm angry. So I worked on that. And then eventually I began to learn that when I was angry, I was actually afraid. And that's a whole other show. You can look at Love and Fear in the podcast and listen to that. All right, so we're going to go to break. And we're going to come back and we're going to sum up some of the stuff about ultrasensitivity. Because what I want you to go away from this show is I want you to embrace this ultrasensitivity and feel empowered. Okay, we're going to go to break. We'll be back in a minute.
Look, staying healthy isn't easy. Watching your diet, hitting the gym, avoiding stress. But a good night's rest helps boost your overall health and wellness. And it couldn't be easier. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed is the only bed that effortlessly adjusts in response to both of you. The result? You wake up ready for anything. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. And now the new Queen Sleep Number 360 C4 Smart Bed is only $14.99, plus special financing, only for a limited time. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
This is the best of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay. Dr. Patty, and we are talking about ultrasensitivity, whether or not you are an ultrasensitive. And I'd want to take a minute to do a shout out to my beloved granddaughter, who makes me smile. My oldest granddaughter, I have three grandkids, and they're amazing, and I'm not prejudiced at all. But my oldest granddaughter, who did a show with me here on bullying. She's on the spectrum, as she has autism, and she's brilliant and intelligent and beautiful and talented, and she's very kind and very loving. And she is an ultrasensitive, and she would tell you that, because from the time she was little, I've helped her learn about ultrasensitivity. But she has kind of a double whammy. She is an ultrasensitive in terms of her emotions and what we've been talking about here today, and she also has sensory processing sensitivity. And so when somebody has a double whammy like that.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.